What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies feline with a death wish. Be right, didn't help. No name on a guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Welcome into the show after a busy weekend. Yeah, we're here. I know it's a bit of a switch up, but thanks to Jeremy and Joe and Brian for showing up from 7 to 10 to get our day started. And look, we'll go from 10 to 12 and then go about your day. I mean, you can listen from 12. I don't even know. I'm assuming Rich isn't working, so I'm not Rich like I'm a friend of his. Rich Eisen. I'm assuming he's not coming on. I don't know who they have to fill in, but I will tell you, this is, at least for locally, the end. We're closing this thing out. As I said, Jeremy and Joe filled in for John and Lance. Those guys will be back tomorrow, John and Lance, in studio here, and we'll get back to normal as it's Labor Day. Those guys take the day off like they always do, and they'll be back tomorrow. But as far as what happened over the weekend, we had the Astros dropping 2 out of 3 to the Diamondbacks. Going back to something they were on a couple weeks ago now, 3 weeks ago, where they win the first game of a series and lose two. It felt like momentum was building. Hell, I even saw MLB, their official account, ask a question, and it must have made Ben Verlander proud. They asked a question, are the Astros inevitable? Now, at the time, you know, they were above 500 and playing pretty good baseball. It seemed a little bit of a stretch considering what the season has been, but they had momentum. And the actual official Twitter account from MLB put it out there, and then they subsequently lose to the next two. So there that is. So maybe we backed off of that. But it wasn't to do with the pitching. The pitching did their job. The hitting, not so much. Now, you gave up runs late on Saturday to lose that one. And then yesterday, the bats were just very silent after the early stages of that game. But, you know, Ethan Pecco around for a good time, not a long time on Saturday. But he did what you would want from a guy who you're always going to be a little concerned about when he goes out there, just because there's not a lot of evidence that he is going to be a solid guy every time he takes the mound. But he was more than fine in that 3-2 loss, excuse me, in that 4-3 loss that wound up in extra innings. So you would have loved the bats, the support, the staff, who was, you know, coming into form a little bit. You start to look at what they've done in the midst of this run, and it has little to do with the pitching as far as even when the losses do pop up. Peter Lambert yesterday went 7 and only gave 3 runs, had 6 strikeouts, so a nice outing for him, but he winds up with the loss just because the bats didn't do much. You know, they tacked on a run with Lamont Wade's single in the 8th, but other than that, very, very disappointing as far as the bats are concerned, where they go 4-for-19 with runners in scoring position over the final portion of the last 2 games of the series. So you drop 2 out of 3. You remain 2 games up in the National League. So they're kind of where we were when we left, or excuse me, in the American League West. They're kind of where we left you on Friday. Still with the lead, still with the Rangers lurking as the race to the AOS finish will be paved with mediocrity, it seems like, and we'll see how this all shakes out. Even though the teams themselves, the two top contenders, won't be playing each other, so they will have to out of town scoreboard watch each other the rest of the way. And the Rangers get the Mariners, as the Mariners are 10 games below 500 and yet 6 games back. And the Astros, they won't play today, I believe. Actually, I take that back. I don't know why. Maybe because I think everybody's off. No, I'm right. They don't play today. They'll have the day off, and then they'll get back going tomorrow. So, you know, spend your Labor Day night or afternoon, whatever you're doing. If you're listening to us and you got things to do, the Astros won't be on. They got to go to Philadelphia. So they play one of the better teams in baseball, a team who fired their manager early, who were one of the bigger disappointments in baseball, and have flipped the switch with what they've done since getting rid of their guy. The Phillies should be on the lookout, because the Astros do fare well. Now that record took a bit of a hit, but they do fare well against the better teams of baseball. So Wesneski and Painter tomorrow. Eric, you're in early, so we'll get to you here. To be honest, considering it's Labor Day, if people just want to talk for 2 hours about lanterns, I'd do that. If it wasn't for college football, after watching lanterns last night, I'd be locked in on that. But I will temper my excitement for that show. It was a good one. It was a good episode last night. But it is a Monday where some of you are at home, maybe not a lot of you are out. So open forum today, as the college football did play a prominent part of my weekend, but so did a DCU show on HBO last night. As far as college football, we will do Misery Index. That'll be back. We do it every college football weekend. Certainly you guys can chime in, but I have certain teams, certain fan bases at the forefront of my mind when it comes to that. And the weekend itself, weren't any really major upsets. Michigan narrowly avoided one in dramatic fashion. We'll certainly talk about that. We've got the fall of Clemson. If you weren't aware that was around the corner, now you know. If you waited for that game because you were told it was the big game of the weekend, Clemson's past dynasty going into LSU to face off in the new era, face off against LSU as their new era begins, you might have been excited about that. At least the logos mean something, the colors mean something, and then you got to watch the game. If I'm Clemson, I look to my ACC rivals, Florida State, not this version of them, which is a disaster like Clemson right now, but the version that came about in the final years of Bobby Bowden's tenure. They call that the lost decade in Tallahassee, where they were just stuck in neutral, but they couldn't fire a legend. And until that legend decided he wanted out, you just had to suffer the consequences of diminishing talent, diminishing coaching. And that's what Clemson is right now. They're a team who did the thing I've been pushing back against as far as the Astros are concerned. They brought Chad Morris back, their former OC, to try to spruce up what had been a bad or underperforming offense. The problem for them is, beyond maybe Chad Morris and his old ideas not working anymore, there's just a clear lack of talent. You watch them out there. I don't know what LSU will be. It's very early. Did they look like the best team in the country? Sure, but that's only because we have reputation baggage with Clemson. If we look at Clemson for what they are, we shouldn't take anything that LSU did other than, hey, at least they look like a team who can be fun in the SEC. I think even Kiffin was asked about it. He was like, you know what? I thought we'd win 35-10, 35-7, unless this quote is fake, and it very well could be, but it's Kiffin, so I kind of believe it. But I didn't think they looked so dysfunctional. Now, I will have to verify that that quote is real, but that was attributed to Lane Kiffin about Clemson.
Yeah, I mean, I can verify
they did look dysfunctional.
That Clemson was they're a group of five teams that kept it more competitive.
Yeah,
like
Western Michigan chief among them.
There's a group of five teams that got blown out. That kept
Texas State looked more more competent than Clemson did.
Yeah, they moved the ball a little. Like,
and you know what? It is from David Hale, who I thought it was from someone reliable.
Yeah,
David Hale, who covers the ACC for ESPN. I caught Lane Kiffin on the field after press conferences and asked if he was surprised. I thought it'd be like 35-7, 35-10, he said, but I didn't know they'd be that dysfunctional on offense. Noted that LSU scout team scored more on their defense than Clemson did. That's just Lane Kiffin, like, turning the knife. But who can fight back against? If you're a Clemson fan, how do you fight back against what you saw? An overall embarrassing performance. And trust, as I said, or maybe I didn't say this on air. I was talking to Sean before the show started. Unfortunately, we started on time, thanks to Jeremy and Joe. You know, being professionals.
Ugh.
What a crap is that? I was talking about watching a dynasty fall apart. Now, I got to Florida State eventually in our conversation. You heard me mention them. But as a Miami fan, I watched the team go from good to great to good again and then slowly diminish until the logo meant more than the actual product on the field. And that is where Clemson is right now, where they get a prime time early season game against a big opponent. Sure, it was scheduled, and it was big for ESPN ABC to have Lane Kiffin at LSU. I read articles about how the LSU people just felt like it's never felt like this, at least not in a long time. The excitement, the buzz around the program, certainly Lane has a lot to do with it.
2019 was not that long ago.
Yeah.
Chill out.
I'm not you.
Just,
no, I know. I'm just, perhaps.
Come on, guys. Don't act like you're, like it's been 30 years.
I don't know what that was, but the expectations, the buzz for an early season game. Look, LSU set off their national title run against Texas in that big game where is LSU going to be different? And they were throwing the ball all around the place, and that proved that LSU was going to be different. They told everyone, you're not going to see the same old LSU. And I was like, yeah, whatever. When it's third and four, you're just going to run the ball. Turns out, no, that was the case. So it surprised everyone. But I was reading the articles about, and I think it might have been, I don't know if it was David Hill who talked to LSU people, maybe someone else. He was just saying, hey, the people he talked to were like, and quoted as saying, this is this type of feeling in Tiger Stadium around the campus. The buzz before the game was different, and I think even it was put out by this person that he was talking to. That sometimes you got to be the villain, and we're going to be the villain, and it's nice to have all this type of attention on us. We will see how it plays out the rest of the way. I don't think what we saw on Saturday was representative of what they'll be throughout, because if your own head coach, one of the more filled with, let's say, arrogance or confidence, as far as coaches is concerned, one of the most like those guys in college football is telling you, hey, they were dysfunctional, man. Our scout team scored more against this defense. Perhaps what you saw was just a confluence of things, and that's not the LSU we're going to see throughout, but certainly a good showing week one. So that is one of the main takeaways, that Clemson, that dynasty is dead. Dabo doesn't know how to fix it. And at this point, it's just a slow decline until some person decides they've got the will and the money to get Dabo out of there, because I don't know that he has a plan to fix it. They looked hapless on Saturday night against an LSU team that, you know, is 11 in the country. Maybe they're underranked, but I'm not using their performance against Clemson to make that determination. All right, Eric, Jason, you guys want to talk, you're certainly more than welcome to get in. We'll get to you when we come back. Anyone else, 713-780-3776. I say zero. I normally say O, but then I heard Jeremy on the way in, and he goes zero, which is the proper way to do it. It don't roll off the tongue the same, though. It doesn't. I don't like it. I'll see if I drift back to O, even though I know that's improper. And while I heard Jeremy, he mentioned he mentioned the games, and of course, like we'll talk about throughout, and also maybe making the games a little bit more interesting. And I want to welcome a new client or partner to the station, and that is Fliff. Yes, I said Fliff. That's FLIFF. They have a great app where you can go to and make Saturdays and Sundays more interesting. Football is back. And you can make all the picks on the biggest matchups and player performances. You can play for free every day with free Fliff coins and your bonus daily dollar. And if you want to level up, you can purchase Fliff coins and receive Fliff cash as a bonus on every purchase every day. So they're giving you opportunity to play and win. That's what Fliff is about. So, a couple things you need to know. You can make every touchdown, interception, and big play more exciting with Fliff. And, of course, football's even better. We know. We love football. But sometimes you're not locked in on the game. But if you got a little interest in it because of Fliff, that game makes it more exciting. Think about it. If you were watching LSU and Clemson and were like, huh, this game is boring, what if you were on the Fliff app finding a way to make the final stages of that game a much bigger deal? That's what it's all about. You're going to be rooting harder with Fliff, and new players can receive a $250 extra bonus with Fliff Cash. You can download Fliff and use promo code DELSHOW, that's D-E-L, SHOW, to get started. Play for free every day with free Fliff coins, or purchase Fliff coins and receive extra bonus Fliff Cash on every purchase, every day. You can get those huge daily boosts on featured picks every day. You can download Fliff now, wherever you download apps, and Fliff around and find out. That's right, Fliff around and find out.
ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Olea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olea.
We'll get to Eric and Jason. We had Notre Dame, Wisconsin last night, along with what turned into a great game. Look at Luke Kreinholz. Huh. I was like, you know what? This guy ain't very good early. And then he turned into the guy who did get a scholarship to Ohio State. He's now at Louisville, and he was going band for band with Trinidad Chambliss. Trinidad Chambliss just had the ball last, and Ole Miss knocked in a field goal to win it. But that turned into an exciting game.
Yeah. Kreinholz. Whoa.
I was like, where did that come from?
Yeah, I forgot what play it was where he was running the ball and he got into open field. I was like, he's going to house this. Like, yeah. I knew he was kind of, you know, more of a runner.
Yeah, that's kind of was the conversation.
Yeah, I didn't know he had run away from an SEC team kind of speed. Okay.
That was a nice way to, I would say, in the weekend, but we have a game tonight. I don't know how entertaining Florida State's going to be tonight, but if the last entertaining game of the weekend was Ole Miss Louisville, nice way to end it in that 41-38 win for Ole Miss as the SEC goes 16-0. They win every game of the week of week one. Why are you have your hands like, what do you expect?
That's what we do.
Is it? Okay, maybe week one. Let's go to CFP time.
Or week two.
Oh, yeah. Who knows? Who knows what will happen?
They played the number one team.
Yeah. Texas, who we have not gotten to, looked apart against State. Yeah, there was a bad arch pick late in the, the second
right
half?
Right
before halftime. Second half, he led the safety to the receiver. He just locked in on the guy. But other than that, you do what you do against Texas State. You make it look easy the rest of the way. Yeah. I do have a question for you, the Texas guy. We'll get to that later because up until he turned it on as the game kept going, I was like, huh. Does this offense ever, at least when they do straight drawbacks, backs ever play on time? There's a lot of holding of the football. And eventually a guy gets open because your line is good and then a guy, at least against Texas State, and you find a guy. But is there ever, you know, get to the top of your drop and fire the ball? And then he made a throw in the second half in the red zone. That was a nice throw to Cam Coleman for a touchdown. But I noted that as I was watching the game. If you're not throwing a screen pass, I mean, it does feel like there's a beat too long before the ball gets out of his hand. But, hey, maybe you can talk me off that particular talking point. Let's get to these callers. Let's get to Eric first. What's up, Eric?
Hey, yeah, the you took care of business Friday night against Stanford. That was a good win. They should be ranked at least number three. Also, what's going on with Ime? Is he just sitting on the bench? Or, I mean, I know he's coming out of the bullpen, but I haven't seen him in like, it seems like a month or two. And I was shocked last night on Lanterns. I can't believe, you know who? It's actually a manhunter. Mm-hmm. I thought they passed away in the car fire explosion. I want your thoughts on that, though. I'll hang up to listen.
So as that show aired last night, I was surprised. Oh, well, I was surprised, and then there was a conversation before that incident happened that reminded me that I shouldn't have been surprised. So I don't want to get too deep in that because, first of all, it's a comic book show. I don't know how many people are watching, but also because for this particular audience, although I know people like the combination of sports and TV we do sometimes, but also it only happened last night. I don't know that everyone got to see it, so I'll back off on that. Also, to your other points, I thought you were talking about Ime Udoka because you said Ime.
Yes.
Normally you like to take your shot at him. You're talking about Tetsuya Imai, who has only pitched once in the last 7 days. And we've made note of it that he occasionally makes appearances, but how can you trust him? The last time he pitched, it was 3 innings and 2 runs. So that's why he's not really a guy they go to. The Astros have played a lot of tight games. You can't trust that guy out there. Not when you're trying to win the division. And the time you did go to him, he stunk. So he's going to make his appearances will be few and far between. There's not a lot of trust there, and there shouldn't be. How could you do this and put him out there when your team is battling to win the division to make the playoffs? So, Eric, if you really want to see Imai, root for blowouts, one way or the other. I imagine you want it to be the Astros winning a game, then maybe he gets in. Or they're getting blown out, and then he gets in. But you can't throw him out there. As far as what happened on Friday night, yeah, Darren Minsa in his debut with the Miami Hurricanes. It was a Malachi Toney show. He let it be known that he wants consideration for the Heisman Trophy. How do I know that? Because he struck the Heisman pose after every touchdown. 3 touchdowns, 3 Heisman poses. And then his South Florida compatriot who plays for Ohio State, Jeremiah Smith, did it after one of his touchdowns. So those two may be going back and forth all year for, I won't say the best receiver in football, because if you just go by size, speed, and he's outside guy, Jeremiah Smith is going to be he's already being called a generational prospect. He's a year older. He'll be in this upcoming draft, and he's likely to go top 5. But who's the most exciting player in college football? I think, and it was put to this way, I forgot who did it, when they were comparing Steph and LeBron. Like, LeBron is a 6'8 titan. Not many people can walking around look like him. Now, Steph is generally taller than the relative person, but he looks,
yeah.
Since we're just bringing up lanterns, Steph looks like a human being. He would be the Spider-Man of this conversation. Sure, he's got superpowers. He can shoot the handle, but he looks like the rest of us as far as how tall he is, his build. You're all wrong. You think if you practice hard enough in some ways, you could replicate what Steph does. But some of that's God-given. His dad was an NBA player. You're not going to be able to do it. What LeBron does is like, there's not many people walking around like him.
Yeah, they can do that.
Yeah. Malachi Toney, trust, no one is him.
No.
You can't do that either. But you look at him, it's like 5'11", 188. You're like, oh, that looks like a normal human being doing great things.
Yeah. If I do enough ladder drills, I can maybe.
Yeah, perhaps. You can somewhat replicate what he does. Not really, but you get the point. He may be the guy who garners the most attention because of how he has to win. Now, he's fast, he's quick, all those things. Those are things that were, if you want to put it that way, God-given. But he works on the craft, all that stuff. Jeremiah Smith is just like some 6'2.5", 6'3", 220-pound cut out of granite type who you're not going to see a lot of those guys. I think that's why Malachi Toney's going to capture most people's attention because of the way he goes about his business. And Ohio State's put out a lot of great receivers. Jeremiah Smith may be best among them. But Miami, while they've had a run historically of putting out receivers, this is the first guy in a while where people are like wowed by. Of course, we had our own guy here, Andre Johnson, who's more out of the Jeremiah Smith cloth, cut from that cloth than more Malachi Toney. Malachi Toney was preceded by Restrepo, the proto slot receiver at Miami under Shannon Dawson. Shannon Dawson, the OC, will feature the slot receiver quite a bit. You saw Restrepo set records at Miami, but you knew there was a limit to his ability as far as speed, quickness.
College football great.
Yeah, yeah. And now he's caught on with the Titans. Malachi Toney's a first round pick. He's more. I don't know who he is. I saw some people compare him to another Miami great, Santana Moss. He's not as fast, but they do some of the same things as far as their quickness and both their returners, all that thing. So he's the one to look out for. And shout out to Darren Mensah. Well worth that alleged $6.5 million that he's getting. If Jameis can get that on the pro level to be a backup, Mensah can get it to start at Miami. So
500 yards.
Yeah, yeah. Five touchdowns.
Oh, five touchdowns.
Five touchdowns, like 400 yards. 400 yards.
Keep grinding.
Yeah, what? get to 500. He won't be in a game long enough against FAMU, but that no, could be that could certainly be in his sights if they decide to keep him out there.
That was my takeaway, is that Miami, this is not a knock on the schedule, just the reality of their schedule. They're going to be able to do that like five times this year.
I mean, particularly if an undermanned team wants to play man against Malachi Toney, which Stanford decided they just wanted to play their defense, I guess. And their Chris Richard, the former Seattle defensive coordinators, now at Stanford, they've got a bunch of big names over there. Of course, Andrew Luck very prominently displayed throughout as the general manager. He was walking on the field when guys were getting hurt. He did the halftime interview or something like that. Like, I know, don't they got a coach? But you want to talk to Andrew Luck. So he's like, okay, I'll talk to you. Chris Richard's like, we're just going to run man. You know what? Look, it's probably not going to work out for us, but we're not going to get run on. They did a pretty good job of that. And also, this is what we're going to do all year long anyway, so let's just do it.
Because they're non-conference, like, they'll do that. FAMU, Central Michigan, although directional Michigans, watch out.
Yeah, you never know.
But at Wake Forest, at Clemson, you know what? I think they can do it to Clemson. I think they can do it.
Unless
they have a shot.
Unless Clemson is one of the prime examples. This team's much better in week two than they are in week one.
Yeah, you improved the most.
You improved the most. Yeah. So maybe Clemson has marked improvement in them. But, yeah, there's going to be a lot of teams.
Florida State. Like, even the big teams they play.
They're going to put up numbers. The question will be, as that offensive line is shuffled, I think they were shuffling seven or eight guys in as part of their starting unit. Can they find some solidity there as Mensah appears well within his well on his way, excuse me, to being a Heisman candidate, and then he'll have a receiver on his team doing the same.
They're gonna steal votes from
I think Mac Jones and Devontae Smith in the COVID year
that's the last
and Devontae Smith was clearly the people's choice, at least the voter's choice, and he won it, so we'll see. As you'll have Saiyan and Arch and Jeremiah Smith. Although I don't look, Saiyan's fine. I just get out of here with Heisman stuff and Mensah. And then there'll be other people showing up as well.
Maybe, Sam Levitt.
Maybe it'll be Sam Levitt if he gets to face Clemson level competition every year. And speaking of LSU, let's talk to Jason. He wants to talk about LSU. What's up, Jason?
I'm Jason from New Orleans. But, yeah, what I wanted to talk about with LSU was that if I look at Clemson as a middling SEC team, let's say an Arkansas, Mississippi State, Kentucky, although they might be better this year, but a team like that, and they put on a defensive, display that they did, I haven't seen that out of an LSU defense in a long time. And with the SEC, defense can carry them a long way if they have a running game. I'm curious what you guys think, how watching the other games, how their defense, because it's a reaction. Now, the offense will take it out of it. Their offense was great. Who cares? But defense, how did they look compared to the other top-tier teams that y'all watched on Saturday?
So it's difficult because when you watch them, they look great. But as I believe I said in the first segment, what were they playing? Is Clemson, are they a mid-tier SEC team? Or are they a dysfunctional team who you only give your performance credence to because they have Clemson in their name and the Paw logo on the side of their helmet? I don't know what Clemson is. People start to break down their clips, and we're talking about poor blocking setups, like I think one of your former guys, Braden Fajoko, who I don't know if he transferred to LSU or transferred out, but either way, he's trying to make a name for himself in media, was saying Chad Morris is stealing money because he's asking a less than athletic pulling guard to come across the formation and block a defensive end who wasn't even chipped. So things like that, people are questioning the structure, the structural soundness of what Clemson does offensively. Compared to the rest of the SEC defenses, if we just go by name of opponent, you would have to say LSU has the best defense in the country. Forget about the SEC. Because the SEC didn't play a lot of name brand competition. Yeah. And when they did, in some ways, we saw Ole Miss and their frailties offensively as that game kept going on. Texas played Texas State. Yeah. Okay.
Oklahoma
played a team on Thursday night who they blew out, or Friday. So if I just go by week one impressions, LSU's the best team in the country. Just because I see Clemson, and if I'm misinformed about Clemson, I think, wow, I can't. It's hard to do it in week one. But if we're just going by level, alleged level competition and how they played.
Or just like level of athlete.
Certainly, we can do it that way. Clemson may be dysfunctional as hell. But at least the athletes they recruit from the recruiting rankings, who LSU faced off against, probably better than anyone else that that SEC teams played. So you got to give them credit for that. They made Clemson and their athletes look like they weren't on the same par as LSU. But, you know, it's week one. We got a long season. We will certainly see if that LSU team we saw was a representative or was representative of what they'll be going forward, or did Clemson just lay an absolute egg and LSU will be challenged more by the rest of their schedule. Look,
I mean, 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
They go to Ole Miss in what will be a hellish environment. Now, can Ole Miss hold up defensively? Didn't look like it.
No.
But they will. But at least they won't be dysfunctional on offense, and they'll have a quarterback who can challenge LSU's defense.
Yeah, we'll get a better look at LSU's defense at the very least. The offense, they'll probably put up more resistance, I would have to imagine. They can't put up less.
Look, Sam Levitt running around.
Running for like 150 yards.
Yeah, scrambling. He wasn't very efficient passing the football, but he ran around and made plays that way, so it didn't matter. Clemson just couldn't corral him when they did shut down any drop back passing he did. We will see if that translates throughout the rest of the year, and does he hold up? He has an injury history, partly because he does run around a lot. We have seen guys in the SEC run around and make plays. Will Sam Levitt be able to do that through the entirety of the schedule? And as Sean pointed out, 2 weeks from, Saturday, Ole Miss in Oxford, and then they host A&M.
Yeah, what a treat. It's like, now that I think about it, maybe it's just like week one, and like we said, we're racking our brains for like any college football playoff contender that played like someone close to like skill set or like, you know, athlete wise. Man, we just get our desserts in week three of like, the Ole Miss team that looks like they can't stop anybody but can score just however many they need. They just, what's the number we need? Okay, we can get three more than that, sure. Playing an LSU team that just, again, look like the best team of the country. Like if you just walk in with your normal, Clemson, all right. And it's like, it looked like the best team, what the best team in the country does to, as the caller, Jacob? I forgot what the caller's name was.
Jason.
Said, like, even if you just scale Clemson down to, like, they did that to Mississippi State or something. Like, that's still crazy impressive.
Yeah. It is. It was impressive, and so much so that you start to tune out.
Oh, 100%.
You start, okay, there's another score. But at some point, this game's over. I got other stuff to do. I'll watch Cal versus UCLA. That was a good game, Cal versus UCLA.
Western Michigan and Michigan were still duking it out while that
time.
Game was already game that got delayed for 2 hours.
I don't know if people immediately flipped over as they sensed a potential blowout. We have not discussed that very much in the aftermath where Western Michigan decided to respond unlike any other college football thing we've seen all offseason with some grace. Like, you know what? We got an explanation that made some sense to us, and we would just hope for more clarity at the moment. Like, perhaps we get to see, everyone gets to see what the Big Ten review system is like as it's going as opposed to getting it afterwards. But they handled it in a way that not many would handle it, as, and their conference did as well. So we'll talk about that. And speaking of that, Kyle Whittingham has some thoughts on Bryce Underwood. Said, you know, he's a starter for now, but it's not infinite. A corner has to be turned, as all that money that they used to convince him not to go to LSU seems like a poor investment. While Darren Mensah, you pay him alleged $6.5 million, good idea. Giving all that money, allegedly like $10.5 million, to Bryce Underwood to come play for you, that could have been another Barstool podcast or something, several of them, as opposed to giving it to Bryce Underwood, who doesn't even have a firm grasp on that job as it stands now. Hey, new coach, didn't recruit him, doesn't have to be as loyal, I guess. Willie P, I see you. We'll get to you and anyone else when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
It was a big college football weekend, so we'll continue to discuss that. But you guys can take the conversation someplace else if you choose. 713-780. See, don't like zero. Don't like saying zero. 780-3776. Let's get to Willie P. What's up, Willie P? Go ahead, Willie P.
Oh, snap. Yeah, the phone like cut out for a second. My bad. Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning. I don't really have a reason to call. It's been a long time, so I just wanted to say what up. I actually kept telling myself I was going to call to go to that listener party or whatever, get tickets, and then I just never did. Anyway, oh, one thing, side note. Yo, I didn't realize when you said how tall you were that you really are a short king. I saw that video of you guys throwing the football at the helmet.
5'9 at best.
And I was... Yeah, I was like, yo, who's the homie from the West Coast in the oversized sweater with the chucks? Boy, I thought you were about to see walk out that mud. I thought, okay, Dell, I see you. But, shout out to you, Dell. Real quick, Sean A. Mace, I was watching the Texas game on Saturday, and a thought came to my mind. So Texas, you know, in college, they share numbers. And I feel like Texas has the two best players to share a number in college football. Number one, Colin Simmons, and number one, Ryan Wingo. Those dudes are both nice. There was one play where Colin Simmons darted. It was a run play out of gun formation. He darted inside the tackle and just put an arm on the running back and just slung his ass to the ground. I was like, man, that dude is a beast. And then Wingo on the next drive caught a pass down the sideline. I was like, okay, these two dudes are balling. I was trying to watch other games to see if there are any other, like, two players that shared a number on offensive defense who were balling. Nothing came to mind. Shout out Dell in Miami. Tony, it's like watching Tyreek Hill in college right now. I mean, that defensive coordinator, look, Andrew Luck needs to just go ahead and be coach. He all on TV. He like Diddy in the Biggie videos. He all on TV. He all in the background doing interviews. Like, he might as well go ahead and be coach. And they need to fire that defensive coordinator because that dude was some straight boo-boo. Man coverage, you got linebackers and safety, little Tony. Boy, that man was feasting. But anyways, trash-ass Lance, man, just everything got lucky. I mean, what an amazing goal, but that should not have happened. That was, I mean, the first goal, Luke Shaw gave it up to Tyreek George. Like, how do you let him go near post from that angle? That was the thing. I mean, it was a rocket of a shot, and then the second goal, there's nothing you could do, but, I mean, we got so lax. But, anyways, Everton's not going to do anything anyway, so it doesn't even matter. Champions League starts up this week. Anyways, you guys have a wonderful Labor Day. Love the show, as always. Sean A. Mace, what it do, baby?
He's called. Appreciate it. He just called to just talk, and then he had plenty to say. So appreciate it, Willie P. Yeah, he's referencing Everton scoring a late one to tie Man U over in the Premier League over the weekend. So he mentioned Wingo and Simmons, and we got to talk about U of H. We have not gotten to them in their game. We were talking about it before the show because they cut away from U of H because of that weather delay to get to the Texas game. They moved the Cougs to ESPN News. They beat Oregon State in a game where they felt like they had control, but they could never get a stop on. There were a couple of third and longs they couldn't get stops on, and then it wasn't his fault, but Wegman throws a pick as the Cougs, I think, were trying to go up three scores. Like, Oregon State scored, it was 26-13, something like that. And the Cougs were well on their way to going up three scores. And receiver kind of stumbles, ball's tipped up in the air, and it was picked off, and Oregon State goes down and scores, and all of a sudden you got a game. And ESPN's like, sorry, Texas is about to kick off. Beat it. You can go to ESPN News. I found it, kept track, and credit to the Cougs for scoring again. I think their defense just could not close out possessions or close out drives or sets of downs. And that's why Oregon State got going. But overall, tough win. Good to see them bounce back after Oregon State gave them a little push. And they win that one to get their season off to a good start. There was a big play. He was just talking about numbers, Colin Simmons and Wingo. I think it's Amari Thomas, number zero for the Cougs, who made a big catch on third down when they were only up six as they were trying to put the game away. He makes a big catch. Moss is a guy. I thought it was pass interference, but they didn't throw a flag on the DB. He makes a catch. The Cougs go on and score. That was a big play by him as the receiver who transferred from UAB made a play to really give you some a bit of relief, because if you got to punt the ball back the way Oregon State was moving the football, who knows how that goes. But it was nice to see them get a win. He had eight catches, 133 yards. He was a big-time performer in that one. As far as the Texas game a little bit more, did you see the clip of Arch nearly not making out to snap one?
Yes.
He's running out of the tunnel, and Texas does their intro where they've got smoke. Everyone's ripping off Miami.
But, we invented smoke coming out.
Yeah, yeah. It's a ripoff of Miami, but whatever. Everyone has their own variation now. And I don't know why a guy in a hat grabs him. I don't know if he was trying to protect him for something.
Yes.
What was Arch about to run into that the guy grabbed him?
I believe he was about to run into a photographer
Oh, there was one on the ground. Because there was another person standing up.
Yes. And then you have to, like, Zapruder it almost. Because there's an angle from the opposite side. And it's just a picture of Arch Manning flat on his face in the tunnel. And
yeah.
I can see, like, the shape of another human being also on the ground because Arch Manning just ran into him. So I believe the hat guy was trying to, like, whoa, watch out. There's a guy kneeling or whatever, you know, crouched down
Got
to
it.
Get the picture. I believe that's what happened, but there's also a lot of smoke. So who knows?
So I didn't get my eyes on the entirety of that game, because why would I? It is Texas State. But was that the hardest hit he took all game? I know they got to him a little bit.
Yeah, so he got sacked once. That wasn't like anything crazy. And then there's on the touchdown to Coleman, or the second touchdown to Coleman over the middle, he got like hit in the face after the play, but it wasn't like,
nothing
it
like
wasn't anything crazy.
Nothing like what happened to Josh Hoover.
Nothing like any given Sunday. Yeah, any given Sunday.
If you missed it in
maybe the longest yard where the helmet gets pulled around.
Yeah, Indiana's win over North Texas. Indiana wins comfortably. Their defense probably wasn't as impressive as they'd like. A lot of guys gone from the team who won the national title. Josh Hoover's a new quarterback. He was good. I mean, not a lot of opposition from North Texas, but on a play that was flagged in the red zone, he gets pressured, gets his helmet ripped off. You're like, oh, okay. You see his face initially. You're like, okay, helmet ripped off, penalty. And then the next shot, they show him, there's blood just. You think the Brian Cushing one was nuts? There's far more blood. He's a bleeder. It's dripping down his face. You see it on his white pants. I think it was in the first half. And he doesn't wipe it off. They don't. Because it's a penalty, he doesn't have to come off the field when his helmet's off. So he's still out there, and he throws a touchdown to the back of Enzo High that Charlie Becker makes a great play on. And You cut to him again, and it's just profusely going down his face. They eventually cleaned him up once he got to the sideline. But if there is a Indiana repeat or a great season, whatever retrospective they have, that'll be one of the shots you see. It'll be part of a season-long wrap-up on one of the networks. It's just lots and lots of blood, and he threw a touchdown pass immediately afterwards. So I did talk about this earlier, talking about quarterbacks. Let's get to Arch. Talk me off this, Sean, because I watched Arch Manning play, and beyond the hype of whatever you think he is, every time a bad team is mentioned in the NFL, it's like, hey, they could have the top pick, and they could take Arch Manning. That's just going to be part of the conversation. Besides the fact that he's got a little after-play Eli in him, like he's always adjusting his stuff.
Oh, yeah.
He never looks all that comfortable. He's always adjusting
taking
something.
Taking his helmet
yeah,
off.
Yeah, he's got a bit of Eli in him after the play. I watched a lot of Texas, and when Sark can dial up a screen or get a tight end in the flat, they play on time. They're going to be explosive offensively. This isn't a question of talent. I mean, they're going to score points on people. It's just a product of the play caller and what they've done to recruit. But when it's just regular old drop back stuff, it always feels like there's a beat and then another beat before the ball goes out. It doesn't happen all the time, but it feels like we heard at Willie P mention Malachi Toney. When you watch Mensa play, now maybe it's because the Stanford DC is manning up Malachi Toney so you can play on time. And Texas State's like, you know what? We're just going to play zone.
Let's make it difficult.
Yeah, we're going to make it difficult. We're just not going to hand.
Put some guys behind.
We're not going to hand can Coleman one-on-one matchups. Maybe that's what it is. And this isn't a criticism of Arch processing because I know some people have some thoughts about that.
S2.
We'll see what happens when he goes to the league. Do you sense that there's always an extra beat before the ball comes out of his hand on like regular dropbacks?
So. It was very noticeable last year that the difference between Arch and Quinn Ewers were like the two most recent guys to run Sark's offense is that Quinn Ewers was always quick with the like check down. He kind of starts like closer to the line of scrimmage
and then works his way up.
Where Arch looks for the big play and then works his way back a little bit. So I think some of that is like he is just waiting for like the post pattern 25 yards down the field always.
Yeah.
Unless it's like, you know, unless it's like a specific situation, he will check it down. But yeah, I think it comes from, and the interception he had before halftime too, like Arch is a very aggressive quarterback. He's like with the ball in his hands, like either running or throwing, like he is trying to make a play. Basically every time, like he is hunting explosives. So I think some of it comes from that. Is that
got it?
It is long developing plays that he is wanting to see.
He's hunting big plays.
Yeah. He wants to see it develop before he throws it to one of the tight ends.
Got it. Okay. I just noticed that. Look, he didn't make a lot of poor decisions. We talked about the pick. He would get it to the right guy, but there's always a hold. And Cam Ward did some of that in college too. Always hunting for the big play. And usually it worked out for Cam.
I think that's what it is. Yeah. Just comparing those two guys running the same offense.
Got it.
That's what it feels like the biggest difference.
Got it. Okay. And he'll probably see a lot of defenses who are trying to take that away. And as people say, right or wrong, that it's better to coach that out of them than to coach aggressiveness into a quarterback. You don't want a guy who's checking down all the time. You want a guy looking for the explosive. And then you can work with him on taking what's there. And because you've got Smothers and Brown, you can turn and if there's a receiver underneath, those guys can go turn a 4 yard a check down into a first down if you need them to. All right. We can go now. I just need to have that answer to
me.
Because I don't want to be in the realm of taking shots at Arch because that can be something people want to do. But I did notice that and a Texas guy who watches him, maybe not every play, but maybe most every play he's ever had. Yeah. Well, could give me some information, so I appreciate that. All right, hour one is done. If you want to join us in hour two, you can. Number 713-780-3776. There is some NFL news. Another quarterback, a starter, has been named. We'll also get to our misery index. If you don't know, if you're unfamiliar, it is simply the fan bases coming out of the college football weekend who are the most miserable. Whether their team won in some cases, whether their team lost, or maybe a specific quarterback or coordinator that has caused that. We'll talk about that. We normally do it on Tuesdays during the football season because there's a lot of NFL, certainly the Texans to discuss. But without that happening, we can do it today. Also, there's a big story from DJ Bienemy on CJ Stroud. It's kind of things we've seen throughout this offseason, but this is more likely for a national audience as there will be a lot of attention on that quarterback. We'll kind of look through some of it and see if there's anything new because CJ has some quotes in that. So we'll get to hour two when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.